Welcome to the Mug Meeting Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert Detilieu. Our March meeting started with the usual roundtable discussion, moderated by Doug Shufelt.
Yes.
He's got a friend, he's got a dual boot. He's just installed a wireless network card. It's a Dell Optical 70?
Yeah.
And a DVD drive. All of a sudden, whenever he tries to get into Linux now, instead of his name coming up, the username is the computer name and password doesn't work, and I'll fix that. What could have caused it? Or
what did you do when you went from the good state to the bad state?
Well, I'm not entirely certain it was, but we put a wireless network card into it, and DVD drive.
So it was only hardware?
Other than getting the wireless card working in Windows, that's the extent of software to get it.
Are you using Grub?
Probably.
Mint?
Mint 10? Well, whatever.
Then she's in Grub.
She's doing more about the setup than I do, actually.
Just standard Mint 10.
There's nothing in the DVD.
No. I don't even think the DVD's been installed. Well, it's installed, but I don't even think it's been set up yet. Just kind of an all of a sudden thing. I mean, there's nothing for him that he can't afford to lose by just installing Linux. But
so Windows still boots.
Oh, of course, Windows. Windows boots. Everything's fine again.
Unplugging the DVD drive and you can see if it works. Maybe the master and slave would buy us a hard disk in a different place. Nothing from it.
Okay.
Oh, I should ask. More than one hard drive?
Nope, only one hard drive.
If I set it up, it is, yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't been changed. I don't even think he's been using it that much. He plays Diablo, but that's the only reason he has it. So I can't do new inquiries or anything. I don't know. Well, what can tell him to just start taking the world? When I came across this problem installing Linux on another one where I actually had to take the belt and wireless out in order to install Linux, it'll boot, come to this name.
So it's coming up with a graphical login? Mm-hmm. It's not a text login, it's showing you a graphical.
Yeah.
Try going to another console, like Control-Alt-F1 to the text console. That'll quit the graphical, which is screwing you up, and then you can just type in whatever the guy's name was. Like, it'll give you a prompt, and then you just type in his password, you should be able to get in there. And then you can go in and fix the, that's the hard part, of course. Is mm-hmm. Then you can figure out what's causing the GDM or whatever to screw up and don't have any ideas for you there. But at least that gets you into the system where you can start hacking around at the command line. So control
that point. At that point, he'll be bringing it Friday. Yeah. I don't want to mess with that. That is a question.
If you switch to another console, log in, and you start X there.
I'm sorry?
That's a good question. Is that possible?
You probably have to quit the because wouldn't X still be running? When GDM is running, is X running? It is, right?
Yeah, it has to.
So you'd have to kill all that, and then you could maybe do a start X.
But then after
that.
To get into a GUI.
Yeah, that's true. As long as it doesn't immediately go to GDM again. I don't know whether start X would then.
If you're already logged in, you're logged in.
Yeah, okay. I never use graphicals with login, so it's all Greek to me.
Okay. So, are there any other questions? Yes.
I noticed an article in our newsletter this time regarding the Raspberry Pi. If anybody here gets one or they know where I can see one, we'd really like to know because I'm pretty big here. I know they're backordered. They're backordered until Christmas next year.
No one has a case yet.
No.
You have to figure out something to put it in.
Yeah.
Matchbox? It won't fit in an Altoids tin because the corners aren't rounded.
True. There's nothing in Dremel.
I suspect they use every little bit of space on that board.
Well, the other one I'm interested in is one called Cotton Candy, and if anybody sees one of those, I'd like to see it. Apparently, it's like a USB stick, and it plugs right into the HDMI port, and we'll run video that way. And it's got Bluetooth on board, so you can actually just have a Bluetooth keyboard, plug it right into a TV, and you've got an operating computer, and it runs a full version of Ubuntu. It comes with. It'll be under $200 US.
Does it get the power from
HDMI?
My understanding is that it takes enough power from HDMI to run, but I couldn't verify that at this point.
HDMI actually sourced power.
There is a power over HDMI system, but it isn't supported on that many things yet.
No.
The idea is that you could use it for a dongle for a wireless video.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Wireless video. Well, and so if you have your a bunch of TVs and then a central video system somewhere, you can just stick dongles on them. Something like that.
Wall of sound.
The cotton candies appear to be supposed to ship in the next 2 weeks, so. And there'll be a shortage.
I've got mine about 4 months estimated.
For what?
The Raspberry Pi.
The Pi? Okay.
I got a question. We've got a Shaw cable connection, the 50 megabit service, and we've been having some trouble with it. We've had some installers in looking at it, but I'd like to know what type of communication occurs over the coax. So what's the coax from back to Shaw? Is it just TCP IP traffic? Is there extra stuff that they need to have access to manage it? Apparently, with this new Cisco model, they provide it with the service. They have access to the cable modem router, wireless access port all in one. They maintain the firmware, like there would be firmware upgrades. Those parts of the interface are locked, like you can't go in there and upgrade the firmware yourself. So they obviously have access to it, the DPI trap. Is there something more over coax to the ISP, or is it just straight DPI?
When I called to get it set up because I wanted to turn the wireless off, he did give me a different username and password to log in with than what was on the back of the box itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that might unlock stuff, too.
You can do it. We got it at work, and you can make it do straight bridging so that you're going from coax to RJ45. And it does layer 2, so you can, if you do a TCP dump on a connected device, you'll see all the ARP going through, and you do a DHCP client, or DH client, you get an address.
And so the coax port is just another...
Coax is just a connection.
An interface.
It's an interface.
And all the traffic there back to Shaw is still TI?
Well, it'll be at a lower level, but you don't have to care about that at all. Because it's basically like even a speed stream modem will take ATM traffic, it'll frame it in ATM going to the DSLAM on MTS network,
mm-hmm.
and it'll give you PPPoE on the other side
mm-hmm.
as an access point. This will do the same thing. You don't have to care about what goes on the coax line. You just have to care that you get IP on the other side.
Yeah.
You get layer 2 on the other side.
I mean, I don't care in the sense that I want to try and use it. I'm just curious on how it works.
Oh. Yeah, it's layer 2.
Into DOCSIS, because that's the specification is how Kim's taught.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of if you force it into bridge mode, you can do some cool stuff like ARP spoofing. It does work, especially if you're on like depending on how many people are off that coax network, and you can if you do it correctly, you can spoof other people's addresses.
Okay, thank you.
Not advised.
No. But other than that, it's done on ARP, so you won't see anybody else's traffic unless it's it's a switch, right? So. You won't see anybody else's traffic.
It's DOCSIS.
DOCSIS is the basically there's a big book that says how the electrical signals and I don't imagine this is how the electrical signals go and data flows over it. But I assume anything that goes over Ethernet, whether it be IP UDP, no crap, just goes from the Ethernet port out, and then they've just got you in Shaw.
Yeah.
Plug in your modem without it connected to Shaw, it'll not make the connection. So
yeah.
DOCSIS is the actual how data gets from Ethernet port to the
okay.
So it's more Ethernet like than ATM like?
I have no idea.
Probably is. Nothing's like ATM. Thank God.
Maybe for what it's worth, I'll mention the problem that we've been using is flap if they describe it. So the modem will off, their power stays on, the online will put it off, but 30 seconds comes on. It happens.
Did you run your own coax cable?
In fact, it's that they've replaced all the cabling for gauge cable and the stuff.
And they re-attenuated all those cables?
Yeah, right. And they tested it for backflow, like backflow mm-hmm. line, and they haven't yet been able to figure out what's causing it. and it'll be fine 3 days, and then it'll go offline 15 times in 2 hours and 48 hours.
Anybody else in that building running radio equipment?
Or a microwave?
Yeah, a microwave.
Sure.
Like
microwave ovens?
No, yeah. No. Well, even so, there could be a company in the building that's using a small microwave transmitter unit.
Well, we're the only ones in this building, but we do have a neighbor in another building right now. I don't think so.
Dennis,
I'm pretty
office.
Sure that they're a Shaw customer also.
Accidents. Yeah.
Anyways, but so, you know, I've been working with the guys as they've been going through all these steps, and a lot of them don't really have any idea. I mean, they know how to replace the equipment, and they understand what the cabling goes and how it ends up with pull, but they don't have a sense of, like, a protocol level of what's happening. And they are monitoring it at Shaw, and they say that they're seeing flapping, and our router reports as well so far.
They're the power of the power's built.
Well, it's external little brick.
Because I had that problem. Shaw kept replacing my modem, but they never replaced the brick, because the brick must be fine. And it was the brick that was the problem. And that could be it. If the brick is overheating,
if it's browning, it'll do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have them replace the brick.
Mm-hmm. Try that.
My problem.
Yeah. They put in, I think, attenuators on the line to try and control, but according to them, the signal is appropriate. They put in an isolator to try and remove the electric backflow up the line, but they said that they're sort of grasping at straws because the power they measured was 4.5 volts or something back, which they said was not significant, probably dissipate or get anywhere. It's not out of the ordinary anyways.
We had something really similar at my parents' place. Yeah, like every time we took it, cut it off. And then you'd unplug it, plug it back in. We had to connect it back in. That's exactly the problem we're having. But it's, have them replace the brick.
We had just the 10 meg high speed service in there for a year prior to this. Never had an issue. Just with the upgrade, since the upgrade to the 50s. But one of the things he did tell me that was interesting is that they run 4 frequencies through the coax cable down the modem. The way they provide the services, each one is 25 meg. So you buy 50 meg, then you buy 75 meg.
The channel.
Okay, yes.
I don't know how many of you are aware of TED.com, but anybody that's in this room that doesn't know about TED.com should go there once in a while to watch the videos. There's an interesting video on this week, process control, and it's regarding these quadcopters doing research with down in the States, and they're using all Linux-based systems to write the programs and the algorithms to run these quadcopters, and they're programming them now based on insect theory for groups and things like that, and you really have to watch the videos to understand how far they've come with these quadcopters in the last 6 months, because they can actually build structures with them in autonomous mode. Mm-hmm. In other words, just provide them with a diagram of the building and the modules and let them go and they build the structure. It's really amazing to see how, and the reason I'm bringing it up is because it's all Unix and Linux-based control systems that's running these things. So have a look at it. It's easy to find if you go to TED.com, the homepage, you'll get a whole splash of different things that are there. And one of them is on the quadcopters. Go have a look at it. Very, very interesting.
Okay, I got a bit of a hardware gotcha for everybody. It's been resolved, by the way. So it starts off with a machine GX270. I'm running FreeNAS on it. I have 2 IDE drives and 1 SATA drive. With the 2 IDE drives, everything was fine. FreeNAS worked the way it was supposed to. Now, the SATA drive was my old Linux hard drive from my current machine. And before my motherboard was giving trouble, I thought it was the hard drive. Turns out it was the motherboard, but the hard drive had a full installation on it. So I plugged in the SATA hard drive, and even though I told the new machine specifically to boot from the IDE drives, it ignored that completely. So what I ended up having to do is, after a bit of research, find a way to completely wipe out the SATA drive, no MBR, no nothing, and that resolved the problems, and it's now booting fine off the IDEs. Now, this may apply with other machines, but for the GX270s, for certain.
So is the BIOS preferred?
Big time. Couldn't do anything until I wiped out the boot sector. ended up having to go in with a live Linux disk and telling it to take off the boot flag on the SATA drive.
Does SATA controller have its own then? Put itself in place of IDE?
I'm not too sure what the story was with that, but it was built on physically onto the motherboard, so probably.
Oh, the Dell GA270 BIOS is everything. So it's whatever the BIOS machine controls. It's not a separate one for the, it's part of the migrated into main one.
And like I said, even though there is a menu to say specifically boot off of the IDE hard drive, it ignored it completely.
Menu was there, the coding behind it was.
Exactly. Well, it might be there, but it was a bug. It was buggy.
Found the SATA drive and said, close enough.
Yeah.
I've got a question. My stumper of the month. We've got at work a server system running CentOS 5 with the Apache web server on there, version 2.2.3, with the libphp module enabled, so that PHP interpreter runs within the Apache server processes. Recently, we started getting this situation where once in a blue moon, it serves the raw PHP file to the client instead of processing it. This may or may not be related to the CentOS 5.7 to 5.8 upgrade, because both Apache and PHP were upgraded at that time. And we really started noticing it after that, but I can't swear that it is related to the upgrade. But it's the weirdest thing. Like, most of the time, it works fine. It's just once in a while, the raw PHP code goes through to the web client. Has anyone seen this or heard of it?
Seen it, experienced it, no solution. Mm. So you're not unique.
So, is this going to expose some of your PHP want to expose?
Yes. I mean, it's not a security problem right now, because the PHP that is being exposed doesn't have any, you know,
but
sort of secrets or anything.
Else could,
potentially, yeah. Okay. But I mean, it's annoying because it's affecting even our homepage. And so, yeah, people go to the department homepage, and once in a while, they just get like unformatted raw PHP.
Can you see any errors in log files at all?
No. No, can't see anything on the server side, and it's definitely a server side issue, because the PHP, like when you view source from the browser, you see an exact copy of what that index.php file looks like. So
it's not formatted or anything, like colored and highlighted or anything.
But it's the newest update of Apache, the one that just came out just recently, is it?
It's the one that came with the CentOS 5.8. So it's 2.2.3-63.el5.
Is Apache running multi-thread?
I believe it is.
Yeah, it'll have NPM.
I wonder if it could be
a might be.
So if you saw the code and you hit like shift reload,
yeah,
then you might get the page as it should be
the
next time?
Yeah. In fact, like the problem was reported to me and I couldn't replicate it. And eventually when it was reported several times, I decided to just keep reloading the page. And one time I hit the jackpot and I got the thing. So I was able to view source and I saw it was an exact copy of the PHP source.
What's your extension? PHP or .html or .3 or
.php?
Because there's only one place in the HTTP comp setup where that's handled, like where you set the type handling. Unless you're not setting it like htaccess or something, are you?
No.
It's not.
No.
What if it's an htaccess? Would that overwrite?
Depending on configuration, it can overwrite.
Because if it wasn't an htaccess, then maybe if it was like over NFS or something, there would be some issue. But if it's in your http.com or the PIC files, what you're describing is actually quite impossible. Yeah. Never seen it.
Yeah.
My only possible guess is that, because Apache, when it starts, it looks a whole bunch of things serve multiple at the same time. So if you're under high load, it might, you know, work down and get to the fifth or fourth. And maybe libphp can only service so many instances of something. That's like a big guess. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like, because it's random, it sounds like it might be just one of the instances didn't, maybe one of the instances properly. And so you hit like, spawn eight of them. Mm-hmm. Maybe one out of those eight can translate properly.
You think it would throw an error?
It should, yeah.
Well, what it sounds like is the PHP interpreter is not being executed for that particular instance.
Yeah.
Which brings me to the next question. Is this on a single server, or is it an array of servers, or is it possible that it's a problem with the
It's a single server, and the files are on a local file system.
So it could be a processor error. I mean, that's just like you. That's a very remote possibility that the processor is doing something strange every so many cycles.
Your kernel will hang
each time, though.
It's not a processor issue, because otherwise your kernel would crash.
Okay. Yeah. My only recommendation would be, instead of using libphp, try and config php to this fast JavaScript, because that way it's always loaded, and it should be about as fast. You still have IDE that has to talk. Apache still has to talk to php. In theory, you'll still get decent speed and way to work.
Also, do you have the like SU exec stuff on? Because that is a modified.
Yes.
That is a modified.
Well, in fact, I've got
interpreter.
SUPHP loaded in there as well.
Take that.
But
off.
It shouldn't. The way I've got it configured, it shouldn't be affecting the directory tree where my main files are stored. It should only be affecting home directory files.
Which
possible
process
it's doing something wrong there, but pardon me?
Which process mode are you Apache has multiple process modes.
Yeah, it's whatever was set up by default in
NPM,
Red Hat Enterprise.
NPM prefork.
Yeah, prefork.
I've got an idea. This is going to take it into a completely different direction. And it's just about as rare as what you're talking about. But were all the problems on the same browser? Because No.
It's not a browser issue. Okay. I'm convinced of that.
And the PHP looks good and well-formed when you see it on the screen. Like, it opens with the open PHP bracket. It's not like it's starting in the middle of the
No, it's
page.
It's like an exact
the
copy of the file from first character to last character.
Yeah, it's not executing the
Because, I mean, the first character would be very important if you screwed up.
Yep.
There's, like, some
yep. No,
Unicode
the first,
or something.
First character is in there.
Okay.
Yep.
It's processed 90% of the time, so...
99.9.
That's insane.
Does it happen more when the server is under load?
I haven't really determined any particular pattern to it. It's happening so sporadically that it's hard to really detect a pattern to it.
First few times, you're like, yeah, crazy people.
Yeah. They're mistaken.
Yeah.
Is Windows involved somehow?
Exactly.
Exactly.
I've done like 1,000 scripts on maybe 100 servers in 12 years, and I've never seen that. Like, all you've seen the same setup is what you're describing.
Yeah.
You're on to something weird here.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the effects of it, but yeah, I've never done anything
that's weird.
I've never even seen it. That would be scary.
I wasn't even able to
happened.
Find anything on Google.
Try and find it
just with searches for various sorts of keywords.
Oh, might have to say that to ask Adam when he's back.
I think Apache reads that PHP file every time it spawns, and if for some reason it can't read that file, it just loads the file back.
Hmm. Yeah, but it's reading that file successfully. If it can give you the contents of it, it's reading
the
file.
No, not the file. It's condition file, the one where the definition says a PHP file needs to be approved.
That's
right.
Not start.
The definition of that.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's rereading the config files on every page load?
Not every page load, every restart.
Yeah, it would be on restart.
Restart.
But every time it starts, it's all fine.
No, I think the master process has to start to reread that.
Oh.
Yeah, it does. You can, yeah.
And then,
because of its pre-fork, so it actually has one, and then it has multiple forks underneath it, but the parent controls that.
Yeah, because I changed that file, and it doesn't take effect to tell you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd have half your processes with the new change and half the old, and you'd be screwed up if that happened.
If you're writing PHP in the non-fast way, I think it would at launch. You would have to at least start.
Right, CGI mode, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about the HTTP.conf, though, not the PHP.ini.
That's weird.
Well, I promised you a stumper.
If you can do like a DD of part of it and keep it somewhere, I would love to mess with it at some point. But I don't think it's really possible in this case, but that's just insane.
That's the one and only page that does it, or are there others?
Well, we've noticed it with the home page because that's what gets loaded the most often, but I would imagine this could happen potentially with any PHP file.
But it hasn't yet as far as...
To date, we've only seen it on the home page.
That page doesn't get written to very often?
No. In fact, we're using sort of a lightweight content management system. So most of the PHP files are just templates, and most of the content is actually in a database. So when you get just the PHP file on the browser, you're getting virtually nothing showing up because all of the content is actually through calls to the database. Pardon me? No. There was nothing unusual in the logs.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries, or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.